listening to the SVOPA podcast. SVOPA is the All Pupils Association for St. Vincent School for the Visually Impaired. And now here are your hosts, Michael and Joe.
Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the SVOPA podcast. It's good to be back with you again. It's Michael again, and we've got with us Joe. Hi Joe.
Hi.
How's things been going since we last spoke?
Not too bad, yeah. Weather's still quite nice down here.
It's been okay up north. Been watching the Paralympics and things again.
Yeah, loved it. Really, really good.
It's been absolutely fantastic, hasn't it?
It's been really inspiring, hasn't it? I just think they've been amazing.
Did it make you want to get into any sport again?
Me, I'd like to have a go at sailing, but then I've been saying that for a bit, but I would love to get into sailing.
Well, hopefully we're going to have an interview about sailing next month. We've not got enough room to get it on this month, have we?
We haven't, no.
In fact, one of the things we were talking about when it comes to the Olympics is, you know, opportunities, because we've got Ian Beverley on this episode talking about goal ball. And it reminded me when I used to swim when I was at school. I think some of the guys who used to be would remember that I was swimming like 8 times a week and part of the British team. But when you leave school, you just don't carry these things on, do you? So,
no, it's a shame. But Ian was quite inspiring, wasn't he? Because he went to the Sydney Olympics. And he's going to tell us all about that.
He is. And we also had Jeanette Barclay, which we've just spoke to this evening. And she was a games maker at Old Trafford, so, you know, look forward to that interview as well later on.
Yeah, brilliant. And we've got some good feedback from people off Facebook and via email this month.
We've got a competition coming up as well. So listen closely to that one. And you've got a chance of winning the prize. So, have we got anything else coming up as well, Joe?
We've got a new section this month, haven't we, called Over to You, which we've had a nice recording from Louise Townsend, who some people might remember from school. She's recorded her memories and people that she remembers from school. So if anybody else wants to do that, do a little recording of your memories and what you've done since leaving school. And if you want to get in touch with people, put your contact details on it and send it in, and we can put it in the Over to You section.
Yeah, so just, you know, send them into podcast@svopa.co.uk. And, you know, let's have our mailbox full, and we'll have a lot more set things to put on next month.
Definitely.
So I think we're going to move on to the news.
And now, here are some news items.
Who's Afraid of the Dark by Tom Glassie. This book is produced by RNIB.
RNIB, supporting blind and partially sighted people.
As mentioned last month, we are ready to start releasing Tom Glassie's book, Who's Afraid of the Dark. We have had permission from the RNIB Talking Book Service to do this. The book is narrated by Gordon DeLew. And the first edition from ourselves will be released in October in approximately 2 weeks. So check the podcast feed and you'll be able to start downloading it.
Josie Lynch, who used to work at St. Vincent's for many years and then moved to Bradbury Fields and worked there for a number of years as well, has left to move to Ireland to look after family members. So we'd like to say thank you to Josie for all her hard work over the years, and we hope that she'll be able to return to see us, perhaps for the reunions in the future.
Insight Radio. Insight Radio is a radio station produced by blind and partially sighted people with the RNIB. They're based up in Glasgow, and they actually broadcast in the area on the FM signal. There's a lot of information provided on there. Some of the articles from the talking newspapers. There's music, site issues, events, and just general chat. Feel free to tune in either at www.insightradio.com insightsradio.co.uk. If you're on Sky, you can tune in to channel 0188. On Freesat, channel 777. If you do live in the Glasgow area, it's on FM 101. And also, if you're an iPhone user, you can search Insight Radio in the App Store, and there's a direct app to play it. It's great stuff. I listen to it quite a lot, and I know other people do as well.
Why not email us at podcast@svupa.co.uk?
Okay, everyone, now we've got an interview with Ian Beverley. Hi, Ian.
Hiya there.
You all right?
Yeah, fine, thanks.
Good to have you on, Ian. And we're obviously speaking to you to have a chat about your involvement in the Olympics in Sydney. So I'm just going to go back a little bit, though, to when I first met you in school and everything. So where did you go prior to starting school?
Prior to starting school, I started St Vincent's in 1985, but prior to then I was at Exhall Grange in Coventry.
And how did you find your time at St Vincent's?
Very, very good. It came at a really good time. It came at a bad time and a good time, really, because I was losing my sight towards the sort of end of leaving Exhall. I had to leave there. And then sort of we came up to St Vincent's and liked it really from the start. So sort of coming there and settling in wasn't too much of a problem. The time there was great, and as you know, we had a really, really, really good time. We're pretty good, really, weren't we? Yeah, no?
You were a fellow trombonist in the...
Absolutely,
a fellow bassist in the choir.
Absolutely, yeah. Sort of musically we've done sort of that. And then it's funny because I was talking to someone the other day about riding the tandem.
Oh, yeah.
And and I think the only time I've ever crashed on a tandem is with you going over the hill. Going over the hill on the field. And we used to go speeding round the track there, didn't we?
We did.
On some old Mr. Max old tandem, I seem to remember.
And I've got a tandem, but I've not been on it for years. But I just know now I couldn't do the front, which I could in those days. You know?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, it was you or me, and I think you certainly would have been the safest.
I think I probably was. Not too safe now, though.
No. So yeah, no. The rest of the time was good. I mean, I stayed on an extra year. I was there till 1989. Sort of stayed on with there's John Matthews. Mike Williams, I'm going to get killed for forgetting people, Graham Wilde, and of course late Nicky Lilly. So yeah, we had there's a few of us stayed on in the inaugural 6th year, and then that was it. So yeah, the time sort of thinking back just seemed to go so quickly.
It's amazing, the time since has gone so quick as well. So what is it you've done since leaving school then?
Well, the year after when I left school, I had a sort of a very, say, traumatic, but it was quite an upheaval. I went to Worcester for a year. I can't say I really liked it at all. So that year's kind of been blotted from my memories, really. And then I went onto mainstream college. Went and did a couple of business diplomas, and then went on to university after that. After graduating and after sort of doing my first teaching diploma, I did quite a bit of volunteer work before I got my first teaching job down at RNC in Hereford. And then I had a number of jobs there, sort of culminating in being a manager of European projects. And then sort of that was at the end, how long ago is it now? 3 years ago I was made redundant from there. And it sort of led up to a move back up north. I had another couple of years out of work doing voluntary stuff, and now I'm working for Action for Blind People. So it's been very, very, very eventful. I mean, there's been a lot of things happening during those years, so, as well as what I've just mentioned, so in a sort of potted history.
Yeah, you've done quite a lot, really, haven't you?
Yeah.
You have.
Travelled, yeah, that's for sure.
So how did you get involved in sport, Ian? And what sports have you done over the years?
It was quite funny. I really didn't sort of get too much involved in sport until I came to St Vincent. So I remember PE teachers at Exel sort of calling me lazy and said, you're good for nothing and you won't make anything in sport. So to me, that's kind of really stuck in the back of my mind, and I thought, right, that's motivating. So as soon as I came to St Vincent's, I learned to swim, which I hadn't really been keen on at all. And it's funny because at the end of it, I sort of took part in the Worcester Gala, which from really not being able to swim a few years before to that was really good. But also one of the things actually getting involved in sport, Michael, if you remember, we run away with the the house championship in the sports day? I think to remember Labre, yeah.
I think we finally did, and we broke the hold of DePaul, didn't we, after about 15, 16 years?
Well, we did, yeah, absolutely. Well, we won it the last year you were there, and we also won it the year after that as well, so it was really, really good. And that gives a real, real taste for sport, you know, just things like that. When I went to Worcester, that's when I started playing goal ball a bit, and that's when I got a taste for that sport. And obviously since then, I went on and played goal ball sort of quite competitively, say the least. So that's how I really got involved. And the motivation has always stemmed back to, it's a weird kind of one, but it's sort of, oh, you can't do that. Oh, yeah, I can.
So can you just give us a quick description of goal ball, you know, how it's played? Won't know.
Description of goal ball, it sounds tamer than it really is if you've ever sort of seen it go in real life, but the idea is you have two teams of three on court at the time. Now they're at opposite ends of like a basketball sort of sized court. Each team has three players on the bench as well as substitutes. Now each end of the court is marked out in tactile marking, so people have to wear blindfolds whether you've got a bit of sight or not, so you're all blind. The idea, you sort of orientate yourself with the string and the tape and the string on the floor. And the idea is I think the best description is to hurl quite a heavy-ish ball down the court at the other team. Now, the other team, everybody has the positions, and you've got to block it and then shoot it back. And it does seem sort of quite sort of crude, but there is a lot of sort of tactical awareness in that, because you're using your hearing, orientation, communication skills to sort of know where the other team are, know where the ball's coming from. Now, there are lots of rules governing the sport, including things like when you're throwing the ball, hurling the ball, as I described it, there's a line in front of your team line, defensive line, which the ball has to land before, so which is called a high ball line. If it goes above, beyond that, then the person has to face a penalty. Now, keeping in mind that the court is quite wide, and the goal is very wide, so a person defending the penalty has to be pretty athletic to save it. So you've got sort of rules like that. And each person throwing can only have two throws. If they have a third throw in a row, then they face a penalty as well. And there are also rules for how long you can keep hold of the ball, etc. So, yeah, it's quite... And balls are in sort of at international level. You can... The distance, and I always get me meters and feet the wrong way around. I think it's about 18 feet or something like that. 18 meters it will be. And just imagine a ball coming down there about 40, 50 miles an hour. So it is quite quite brutal.
Yeah. There's a lot more to it than you imagine, isn't there?
There is. And it is quite, you do need a very, very good standard of fitness. And a lot of training you've got to put a lot of training, a lot of fitness training into it before you can sort of keep up really and compete with on the stamina levels and the fitness levels with the other teams.
So, of course, all this is leading up to the fact that Ian is a Paralympian. Well, is really, I suppose. What was your road to the Olympics, Ian?
The road to the Olympics really started in 1996 when I started... I started playing in Worcester in 1990, and then they sort of broke off a bit, and then I started a team up in my home area, which is Scunthorpe in North, well, was Scunthorpe in North Lincolnshire. And we started a team there, and I got spotted by the GB coach. He picked a few of us sort of newer ones out as potential, So we sort of started training, and started sort of building up experience from there, and started to attend international competitions, and really sort of picked us up as, you know, we thought I was sort of obviously good enough to be in that. So just to explain, that's sort of one thing I didn't explain with the rules, the way that each person, let's say it has a position, they have two people on the wing, so each side of your defensive area, and a person in the middle step forward a little bit, who's a centre, who's kind of, I'd say, a main defenceman, but tends to take a lot of the sort of the balls coming in, because it's a bit, they're a bit further forward, and they tend to be more defensive minded than sort of attacking minded, and that, and unfortunately that was me. So I quite enjoyed it. Strangely enough, I quite enjoyed defending and sort of playing there, because I felt the strength was in blocking rather than shooting. So yeah, that's where I was picked, and it's quite a sharp learning curve. But I say the road, you know, led up. The final hurdle was the our real sort of champion bit was in the qualifiers in 99 in Calgary in Canada, where we qualified, and it was quite a really good thing, because the team after the Atlanta games had been, you know, people had left, and they were just building from new. So to actually come from scratch to actually qualify was really, really good.
Yesterday, actually, over here, it was we all watched the opening ceremony. That gives you people an idea when we're recording this.
Sure.
Excellent. A really good night. Did you get the chance to attend the opening ceremony in?
In Sydney, yes. Yeah, certainly. We were, it's like London in a sense. I think the athletes' village there is pretty near the stadiums, and our athletes' village was fairly near as well. So we, it was, yeah, definitely attended it. I mean, the build up to Sydney was, you know, just all of it was really, really exciting. But the important thing was just to keep focused on what you were going to achieve or try to achieve. It was difficult because attending a big event like that, you know, there's a lot of build up, sort of not just in the squad and attending build up tournaments, but also attending Paralympic team events. So you got the chance to sort of join up with the rest of the squad. So yeah, I think the key thing was obviously the key focus was on what you were there for, but you had to obviously, really would have been daft if I didn't sort of try and take in the experience. And the experience was something different. I think when I came into the stadium, I remember coming into the stadium, and the Sydney stadium, the Olympic stadium in Sydney, the stands were quite set away back. So with all the music going, blaring, you couldn't hardly hear the crowd. And I remember I was walking with the physio of the team was guiding me, and I kept saying, "Are we in there yet? Are we in there yet?" And he said, "Yeah, you've been in there. You've been in here a while. So you better start waving." So I just started frantically waving at everybody. So it was so it was just crazy, but it was really, really an experience to just keep. You know, it's something that not many, it's probably one thing I've come to appreciate more over the years, is that it's an experience that very few people have. And certainly to those this year, it's extra special because it's in this country. So you've got a lot more support here, and there's a lot more sort of, you know, that on your side. You know, some people take it as pressure, some not. So as the motivation. So yeah, it's an experience. And if you get a chance to attend, then definitely.
So I suppose I better ask the question, how did we do?
So after gold ball.
Or how did you do?
Unfortunately, no. I think as I said earlier, it was quite a while afterwards. We didn't do very well at all. We came last, which really did rankle with us a long time afterwards, because I believed, and I know some of the others in the team believed, that we could have done a lot better. But, you know, reasons determined that we didn't. But I think now I've come to reason with it that our qualifiers and qualifying was our sort of big goal and achievement. If we had our time again to do it again, I think, you know, in hindsight's wonderful, we'd certainly do a lot better. But, you know, that's it's past now. So I think the main thing to take from it really is that we qualified, we attended, we gave it our best, but it just, the best wasn't enough. And yeah, we sort of moved on, really.
And do you still play? Do you still play goalball now? Or?
No, my knees and my feet are telling me not. Goalball is quite high impact on the floor. I mean, you do wear padding on knees.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I sort of came to the realisation a few years after that if I wanted my knees and stuff in later life, I thought, yeah, well, no. So it's sadly, because I love competing and competing in sport, and I'm sort of thinking now at the time of the Paralympics, I'd love to be there. I'd love to do something, because it sort of inspires you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually thinking the same as well, because, I mean, as you know, when I was at school, I used to swim as part of the British team, and a couple of injuries and things really didn't stop me doing it, but it stopped me temporarily. And like anything, once you stop, you just can't get back into it. And I never picked swimming up again. And I mean, I was good at the time. You know, I wasn't the height of my game, but I was in the British team. I had a couple of British records at the time. But you don't do it. And then every time when this comes up, you think, if only, you know, I could have made it. But you can't really live your life again, can you?
No, you can't. I mean, it's all the if onlys. I mean, last night I was thinking, you know, am I envious of them? And I think, no, I'm not envious of them. I'm proud of them.
Yeah.
I think envy's a bad thing to have, because, you know, you've had your time. What's meant to be is meant to be, and you know, you're proud for what you've done there. And you sort of, and now I'm sort of thinking, I was there last night, standing up, virtually cheering, because I thought, you know, I'm really, really dead proud of these guys. And I know a couple of the guys on the goalball team, as well as I know some guys in the blind football team as well. And you know, dead proud of what they've done and what they're doing. Just to add, I did actually have a Frank Sinatra moment a few years ago. I kept playing goalball a while after I'd finished. Then I stopped for a while, and then circumstances. Someone asked me if I wanted to, you know, join a team just to make numbers up, and I must have played fairly well, because the national team were having a right bad time in the European championship qualifiers at the time, and they were they sort of drafted us in back into the national team.
So you got a second chance.
Got a second chance, and it was good, because the person coaching at the time was someone who used to play with, you know, so used to be on the team, and I managed to sort of help them sort of stave off, you know, being relegated down to the group below. So it was nice to come back and at least achieve something more. But I think I knew at the time then that I really couldn't take it any further, because I just felt, you know, I just didn't feel sort of body really could sort of take any more of that. I've also, just to add as well, that during sort of the last, when I started RNC, I was playing football as well. So I managed to play a few tournaments with the England blind football team as well. So, you know, as an additional thing, that was really, really good. And kind of one of the proudest things last night was knowing, and obviously not seeing, but knowing that Dave Clark, who was the captain, I don't think he's captain anymore.
Is he still? I think so.
He was one of the people taking the torch around the stadium, and I was sort of really dead proud of that, because I thought, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, wasn't it great? Because he trained my first guide dog. He got my guide dog's brother. We trained on class at the same time, so I knew him when he was like 19, 20, and last night I was jumping up and down saying to Jodie, going, I know him.
That was the same. Yeah, I was saying it to Evans. Evans is guide dog, guys. But yeah, no, it's great when you know people who've taken part, and I think you're just dead proud of them. And they're achieving a lot.
For anyone who doesn't know, I was reading my little book, and here's just a snippet, that goalball for men has been in the Paralympics since 1976, and for women it was 1984, apparently.
Really?
So it's been going for that long.
I can't remember how many times we've competed here. I know we took part in the first one. And it was actually in 76, the game was, instead of three-a-side, it was five-a-side.
All right.
So, but they've reduced the numbers down, because I think number of head clashes and things like that. So, yeah, no, it's a proud moment, you know, so good luck to them.
Is there anything else, Ian, you want to add on as well before we round up?
No, I don't think so. It's just thanks, you know, for opportunity. Hello to people who haven't really sort of caught up within years, who pick up on this podcast. Hope you're all doing well. I know I keep in touch with quite a few people, but yeah, hope you're all well, and hope to see some of you someday soon at any of the reunions, really.
Well, obviously you're coming down to Tynmouth anyway, Ian, so there may be a few people down there who know you as well.
Hope so, and hope to make some new friends as well, people who've left beforehand as well, so yeah.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot.
I will speak to you again soon.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Why not follow us on Twitter at SVOPA?
As you sit here in my arms, and the world is going round, but you don't even know what's going on. You're so special, yes that's true, little Alice, I love you, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Alice, you're pretty, yes, that's true, and I want the world to know how much I care. I never thought the day would come for me to hold my baby in my arms. Every day I go to work, but you're always on my mind. It hurts me to go outside the door. As each day passes by and I see your little smile, knowing you'll be waiting there when I come home. Alice, you're pretty, yes, that's true, and I want the world to know how much I care. I never thought the day would come for me to hold my baby in my arms. Alice, you're pretty, yes, that's true, and I want the world to know how much I care. I never thought the day would come for me to hold my baby in my arms. To hold my baby in my arms.
Thanks, Pat, for giving us permission to use your song on the podcast. That was Alice from Pat's album Different Moods. If anyone wants to get hold of a copy of that, you know, please let us know, podcast@svopa, and we can pass your details on to Pat. And also, we'd love to hear your music as well on the podcast. And I think Joe wants me to perform in the future, so I will only do it if I get some feedback.
Come on, everybody, you've got to give feedback, because then Michael will perform next month. Right, now we've got a competition for you. We've got a £10 Amazon voucher up for grabs. And what we want is to rename the podcast. Now, if you're all happy with the SVOPA podcast as its name, then we'll have to think of another competition for you. But we'd like you to come up with some great ideas, really good names for the podcast, and we will pick the best one and they will get the voucher.
Sounds good. So get writing into podcast@svopa.co.uk. I think somewhere in the name we might have to keep podcast, but you know, it's over to you. We'll listen to it, hear what you say, and we'll probably announce it on the live recording being done at the Timbuff weekend. So if you're there, you'll get your voucher straight away.
And now, here are some events. Why not come and join us at one, or two, or all of them?
It's time for our update on our weekend breaks. So let's start with Jo with the Clifton.
The Clifton break is running from Friday the 2nd of November to Monday the 5th. It's £45 a night, dinner, bed and breakfast. If you're a member of the RNIB, you'll get your 10% discount, making it £40.50. The hotel have agreed if you want to stay for longer, if you're travelling a long way, that they will hold the same price for either 5 days or a week or however long you want to stay. If you want to book, you need to phone the hotel direct on 01626770052 and quote reference Fishwick. We've got about 19 people coming so far. If you want picking up from the train station or the airport, then you can phone the hotel in advance and they'll make arrangements to come and collect you and your luggage. If you have any special dietary requirements, please let the hotel know. Also, if they do have a bar, but it is slightly limited on the beer side. So if there's something specific that you like to drink, again, give the hotel some notice and they can order in what you would like so it's there for you on the weekend.
Our next break is going to be up in Gateshead for our North East guys and anyone who wants to travel up there from the 22nd of February. We're going to be using the Swallow Hotel in Gateshead, and the number of people who've said, I've been there recently, it's quite surprising. A lot of blind organisations use it. And so we've had some good feedback as well. With this hotel, you do need to contact them direct on 0191 477 1105, quoting reference SVOPA. Prices for the weekend are £35 per person per night, bed, breakfast and evening meal. And that's for a double or a twin. Single rooms are £50. If we do get enough people, we'll also get a bit of a room we can use so we can do our own thing as well.
Okay, we've got a few more dates for your diary. If anybody's interested, Site Village York is taking place on the 4th of October. We did actually cover this in more detail in last month's podcast. So if you're going along, let us know. You can email us on podcast@svopa.co.uk and maybe a few people could get together for a drink or a bite to eat afterwards. We've also got the reunion on the 18th of May 2013.
And just looking ahead, because everyone wants as much time to plan things as we can, we've got a Christmas break planned for 2013. Yes, I did say 2013, which we're going to use the Belmont Hotel in Llandudno. I've had a chat with the manager there recently, and she's really happy for us to go. We're looking, even though it's well in advance, it's going to be £35 per person per night. So again, a great price. Obviously, we'll roll out more details on that nearer the time. So just put those in your diary and we'll see you all there. And as we said in the past, if you want to meet up locally, let us know. We'll arrange it. Especially for at the Site Village, drop me an email, it's the podcast at SVOPA, or give me a ring and I will actually put my phone number at the end of the podcast. We're moving on now to an interview with Jeanette Barclay, who left school in 1990, and quite a few people hopefully would know her. And she had the great opportunity of being a games maker at the Old Trafford for the Olympics this year. So we're going to find out a little bit more about her, and I'm going to hand over to Jo.
Hiya, Jeanette.
Hiya.
First off, do you want to tell us what year you went to St Vincent's and a bit about your time there?
Yep, I went in 1986 till 1990, so I was actually the year below Alan. It was quite a good experience. I can't really knock being at St Vincent's. Sorry, your dog's not really speaking. I'm trying not to, but she just sounds merrily asleep there. Dislikes about St Vincent's, there weren't really major dislikes, but was the running around the track. I used to hate that. There was always one flagstone that used to catch you in the corner there, or if you stopped at the junior department just to have a breather, there was always some teacher that saw you and shoved you on. No, I didn't like the running track at all. Hated sports day, completely hated that. It was always cold and wet, so I just also had miserable memories of sports day. And some of the school meals were a little bit ropey, to say the least. But they were only my real negatives, not a lot there. My positives was the instrumental. I used to love that on a Thursday. I used to like going playing the French horn there with Mr. Wilson. I used to like being part of the band, so it was that was really, I have fond memories of that. The Worcester Gala, don't know if anybody remembers those. I was the saddo that did used to enjoy Worcester.
It was a good day. I used to enjoy it.
It was, even though we always got beat every year, it was still a good day. Still a ride out, wasn't it?
It was.
It was.
I used to enjoy that. All the build up around Christmas. Used to have fond memories of the carol services and some of the nativity things that we used to do, and the Christmas dinner where you used to have a member of staff on your table, and you also used to hope it was the one that you really liked, you know, not the one you didn't get on with, you know. So I used to love the Christmas dinners. What other positive? Oh yeah, sitting on the hill. Well, the boys used to play cricket. I used to like sitting on the mound there. That used to be good fun summer memories, really, of sitting on the mound with all the cut grass for all those that have hay fever. The taxi outing, I used to like the taxi outing. I remember where we all used to queue up down the corridor and your little pair.
New Brighton, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right.
Yes,
yeah. Oh, she used to go on the bumper cars. And the school discos, I don't know if any of you remember those. But they you look back and you think, well, we really like that? You know?
Yeah.
The good old school discos. So I've got quite a few fond memories, really, of St Vincent's. It certainly shaped your childhood, anyway.
So what have you done since leaving school, Jeanette?
Okay, well, I'm probably classed as your biggest failure. No, not really. I left school, then I went to college, to my local college, Mainstream College. I did a BTEC National Diploma in Caring Services, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And then I sort of got a bit of duff career advice, really, and then went on to University of Central Lancashire, where I did a degree in social politics and administration. But part of that degree should have been the DIPS work, because I always wanted to be a social worker. But unfortunately, on the first day that we all rolled up, we all sat there in anticipation, and they said they'd drop the DIPS work. So you just felt 500 people's hearts sink. And oh, my God, well, we're on the wrong course. So we muddled through it and came out the other end. And then I met my husband, got married, had two delightful children. So you can imagine that sort of put job opportunities on the line for a short while. And then unfortunately became a single parent as well. But that's another podcast in its own right. So I've struggled to actually find full-time employment, but I do a lot of voluntary work. So I do an awful lot for guide dogs. One experience that I had was we went to trekking in Tanzania in aid of guide dogs. So we went to do some fundraising, but it was a life-changing experience, really, to go over there and see people that live in such dire situations where their only prized possession is a tin mug, you know, next to a fire in a house that's made of sort of cattle poo and straw, you know, really brings it home, really, with a big bang. You come home and then you walk into Tesco and there's all the Halloween and stuff and bonfire night stuff, and you just think, oh, gosh, what a waste of money. So it was a very sobering process. We actually went with a group of able-bodied people, and they obviously didn't know that we couldn't see until we sort of got there. But it's amazing how caring they are in Africa too, and how fascinated they are with our white skin. They kept touching. It was in very remote places that tourists don't go to. So they kept like touching your skin because it was white, and obviously they thought it must have felt different or something. So it was an absolute amazing experience. Or you'd squat behind a bush to do what you had to do, and giraffes would be walking by. Or I remember being on the, well, we had a loo that was in a tent, and they dug a hole in the ground, and that was your toilet. But you did have a tent, and all these jackals were running around outside, and of course jackals precursed lions because they scavenge off them. So I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, I just had visions of Jurassic Park. That's all. Yeah, so it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then coming back from there, obviously I went more into doing the more voluntary work for Guide Dogs. So I'm a tour guide up at the centre there. I also do the reception as well when Katie's not around. They always ring me up, can you do 4 days next week? You know, all right then. So again, it's good experience, really. It's a good thing to put on your CV. And obviously I do the talks. So like last week I was doing talks with some midwives. It wasn't guide dog related, but it was all about being pregnant and visually impaired, you know. So again, there's always something comes off something else, isn't there? So you should branch out in more directions. But I would like it to lead to something that paid, you know, rather than everything being voluntary. But never mind. And that's where we're at today, really, you know.
Fantastic. So you were a games maker at the Olympics.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us how you got into that, how you found out about it?
Yeah. The Olympics has always been close to my heart. When I left school, I'm sure a lot of people remember, I always used to be horsey mad. I actually bought my first horse when I left school, which led to four, like they do. And I used to compete regularly every weekend. We'd load up a horse box and be off to some show. So I did used to compete a lot in dressage. But unfortunately, 2 days before I was due for selection for Team GB, I had a very bad riding accident and I broke my coccyx in the bottom of my spine. So I didn't really get on a horse for about a year and a half after that. I think my confidence had gone, and plus I physically couldn't, you know. So I sort of missed my opportunity, really, and turned to carriage driving instead, believing it must be safer. So unfortunately, I did miss my opportunity, but the Olympics has always been something I've been very fond of because I've always wanted to take part. So I was actually mooching around on the ticket website wanting to get tickets to go down to London. And on the website itself was, have you considered being a games maker? And I thought, oh, I'll have a click on that like you do when you're surfing at midnight. So I click on it and I'll have to fill out the application form, which is really long and convoluted. They wanted to know ins and outs of everything, but it was good. You know, it was manageable. So I completed the application form and submitted it and didn't really think much of it. I didn't think I'd, you know, get anywhere, to be honest. I think it was about 270,000 applicants, so quite a lot. So I was quite surprised when I got called to interview. I think that was something like last March. It was quite a long time ago. So we went trundling off up to Media City, Freddie and I, and had a wander around Media City for about an hour trying to find where we were meant to be. All these workmen, you're asking them directions and they don't know, but they work there, so you think they might know. You know, we found our way in the end. We always find our way. So we went for an interview. Again, didn't think any more of it than, you know, well, I've been and I've taken part and got my little wristband to say that I'd sort of been. And then I did get a phone call to say, would you please participate? And obviously, well, the first answer was definitely yes. Yes, I would. I'd love to. So we went to a couple of training sessions, orientation and things like that, getting to look around the stadium. Freddie was told under no circumstances was he allowed to go near that field. football pitch that all these groundskeepers was lovingly pouring and dosing, and they cut twice before a football match, I believe, and they dote over their grass. And he's going, oh, grass, I could go and dig a few holes in that. I made that 12 holes for you, mister, you know. So he was told not to look, not to sniff, not to even consider the grass, of which he was most affronted, but never mind. So we went and we did a couple of training days, which was good. And then we went and collected our uniform. And then obviously our accreditation as well, which was a huge, great big ID that sort of filled your whole body.
And go on, then you've got to tell us about the uniform, Jeanette.
Yeah, all the delightful. We'll start from the bottom up, shall we? Well, we've got delightful, dodgy orange and grey trainers with red shoelaces, but they are Adidas, so to believe they're quite reasonable in quality. Which everybody, you could tell after a couple of days, everybody was limping in them because they rubbed in various positions, you know. So. We then got a delightful pair of grey socks, and we then got some beige trousers, which are not flattering to anybody, I don't think. Beige never looks good. Never looks good, does it? Not with a black dog, especially.
No.
Hide the drool well, though. Not with me. So beige trousers. Then we've got a nice T-shirt that's made of this sort of, it's like nylon-y feeling, quick dry material. And again, that's aubergine, I believe, or I would call it purple and red. And then we've got a matching coat to go with that. Again, it's all designed on the Grenadier Guards, so it was all studs and red and aubergine, and it was quite nice. You know, he did stand out in a crowd. We've got a lovely cap again. I managed to not wear the cap because I do have 160 vision in the right eye, and I couldn't actually see when I had this hat on. The peak was so big, you just couldn't see, you know. It was massive. I had a never suit hat, so it was awful. This peak, you could dig holes with it, I tell you. It was like a spade. And then we got a lovely bag, a games maker bag that was supposed to put all your possessions in, that you carried around with you everywhere, with your little handbook and things like that, and your incident report cards and all that sort of gubbins that you do. Most importantly, it had Freddy's dog food in, and that was about it. It was full, you know. So that was the uniform.
So what jobs did you have to do?
I worked for workforce operations, which meant that I dealt with all the workforce. So they came in the morning, they checked in with us. So you would scan their ID with these like barcode scanners and check them in. They are actually who they say they are. They match their ID. Then you'd issue them with the most important thing, which was the luncheon vouchers. You know, if you worked 6 hours, you got one. If you worked 10 hours, you got two. So you were very lucky. Everybody prayed for two shifts so that they could have two 10 hours so they could have two luncheon vouchers. Travel cards. We issued travel cards. We also issued freebies as well. So every day that you turned up, you actually got a work incentive, really. So it was freebies. So they were like pin badges and journals and all sorts of different bits and bobs, really, just to give you a bit of incentive. But they weren't on sale to, obviously, the public. They are sort of games maker stuff, so it was nice to that they got something that was unique for them. It was also helped with inquiries as well, so if anybody was lost, it was our responsibility to show them where they needed to go. If anybody had anything that they needed to report as lost or stolen, they came to us first. And it was a lot like working on reception, really, you know, that sort of scenario. We also did quizzes as well, ones that they couldn't Google, you know. We tried to think up things that they couldn't Google, and newsletters as well. So it was our job as well, if it was somebody's birthday, to make sure that they got a birthday card, an Olympic birthday card. So there were lots of different jobs, really, you know. You were kept busy. You would think that, you know, you would be quite bored, but you weren't. We weren't at all. You were definitely kept on your toes. I also had the opportunity to go onto the field of play as well, which was amazing. So I got to see the England versus Cameroon game and the Canada versus USA women's football game, which they were really dirty players, I've got to admit. They were not nice to each other. I know a lot about football, but they really weren't nice to each other. I don't think legging each other up is part of the game. So it was amazing because I'm not really a big football fan, to be honest, and it was the first game that I'd ever attended. So it gave me a big appreciation, really, of how hard they actually do work running up and down that field. It's quite a big field, really.
Yeah.
Just to walk around it is exhausting, let alone running up and down it. So it was a wonderful experience. So like when we had the photographers again, we held the rope in front of them so that they couldn't get too near the players, you know. So just little jobs, I suppose, that are not, don't seem important, but were important enough that they needed doing, you know. So
sounds fantastic. Sounds like you really enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. It was a wonderful experience. I really felt a part of it, of a team. There was only six in my team, so we got to know each other very well. But I think people that do sort of volunteer are the same sort of ilk of person. So it was, you know, you had lots of really nice characters in life to talk to. You know, you were never short of anybody to talk to. So it was great just being a part of it and to say that you were there, you know, and you really did feel... You know, obviously, Old Trafford had all been dressed up in the Olympic finery, you know, so it was, you really did feel that you were at the Olympics, you know, and you were trying to get on the tram going back into Manchester and people were lost and didn't know where they were going. So then you carried on your games maker duty of trying to instruct everybody which hotel they were trying to get back to, you know. And it's quite funny because when you're trying to talk to somebody and they've had a few too many to drink, you know, it doesn't quite make sense, your directions, does it, you know? I don't know, but it was fun. And Freddie said hello to the police horses every time he went past, as much as say, "Oh, you're still working, I'm still working too." Cause I had a couple of long shifts. I had to laugh because two police horses stopped to let him cross the road, and it was like, "Yeah, thanks, mate. You know, see you tomorrow." You know, sort of got that sense of feeling off him, you know. But we had a couple of long shifts, you know, so we did a couple of 16-hour days. So bless him, he was. Found catnapping in the day. But, he loved people. He's a people dog, so he loved the meeting and the greeting. Very much loved the meeting and the greeting. So when we had 69,000 fans one night, it was he was in his element. Oh, great, all these people to talk to. But he was a trooper. He didn't let me down. He was absolutely exceptional. His behaviour was wonderful. He was just so spot on. I was proud of him. He was like a proud parent, you know. Fred.
So, right, well, all that's left really is to ask if you want to, do you want to give out any contact details, Jeanette, for anybody who remembers you from school to get in touch or anything?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook if people are interested in Facebook. I used to be Edwards. I don't know if people might remember me being in Edwards rather than a Barclay.
I do, yeah, I remember you at school.
That rings a bell now.
Yeah, and I was the one that spelt it with a Z, so that should ring a bell too.
Yeah.
Spells it with a Z, you know. So, yeah, if people would like to get in contact on Facebook, that'd be great. Obviously, it's Jeanette Barclay, so it's Z-J-E-N-E-T-T. Barclay is in the bank, B-A-R-C-L-A-Y. That'd be great. I'm sure there's a few of you out there that I've not quite got in contact with yet. I've done quite well through with Friends Reunited. That's what started me off getting back in contact with old friends, because that's the sad thing with when you go to special school like that, isn't it? You know, you lose contact with everybody over the years, because in our day they didn't have internet and stuff like that.
No,
they didn't really have computers.
No, not really. The old BBC that they used to wheel in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Gosh.
Yeah. Close circuit television that used to be the size of the room, you know.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for your time, Jeanette. It's been really fantastic having a chance to get that insight as well into the Olympics and obviously in what you've done at school and everything in the meantime and the voluntary work. I may have even seen you when I was training the other year at Guide Dogs, so you never know.
You never know.
Well, yeah, thanks very much, and we will
thanks, Jeanette.
Speak to you again.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye.
Asking for feedback from you, and we've recently got some emails and feedback on the Facebook page, so we'd like to read some of these out and hopefully more of you will get in touch either on Facebook or using the email address podcast@svopa.co.uk. So here's Michael with the first piece of feedback.
Yeah, I've had a nice email from Ian McNamara, and it says, "Hello, this is Ian McNamara. I was at St. Vincent School from 1989 to 1996 when I moved down to Birmingham and changed school. I really enjoyed my time at school and found it a really lovely place to be. I feel that this old pupils group is a great thing to have set up. It would be nice to get in touch with people I used to go to school with. I think the podcast is a great idea, and if there's anything I can do in the future, such as an interview or just general help, I'll be happy to. I am hoping to get back to the school for the reunion next year, as I'm not been back since leaving in 1996. I will be interested to see if I remember my way around any of the schools still. I look forward to more podcasts and newsletters in the future. Well, the school's not really changed that much since you left, but there are a few things what are slightly different. So, you know, it would be interesting next year when we hopefully see you, you can see what you remember. I'm going to hand to Joe because we've had a bit of feedback from Facebook.
Right, we've had a nice message from Nick Brook, who is in America, and he said, "Mike and Joe, thanks for the second podcast. It's great hearing what people are up to back in the UK and to hear how St Vincent's has treated people over the years. Even though I live in the USA now, I would love to be part of the podcast in some way. Please keep up the great work. It really is appreciated. Thanks, Nick."
I remember Nick. He was in our year. He was a great guy. And spoke to him quite a few times and seen him a few times since. And we've had quite a long email, which is actually really appropriate for the podcast as well, from Joan Clark. And she'd like to remember to everyone who knew her. And this one goes, "Hello to all. My name is Mrs. Joan Clark. When at school, I was known as Joan Fricker. I left school in 1973. I applied to be a games maker back in August 2010 after I saw an article in the RNIB Vision magazine looking for volunteers for London 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games. I then called the RNIB and they gave me the 2012 games line number to call along with two forms of ID to quote. When I called the London 2012 telephone number, they helped me fill in the application over the phone. As I explained, I was visually impaired and had difficulty doing the application online. I'm glad they helped me, as it took 55 minutes to do the application over the phone. I then had to wait until December 2010 to hear if I'd been successful, and I was over the moon when I got the email saying I had been accepted. Went for an interview in February 2011 in London, and I passed that. And it's been great ever since. I have been to three training sessions. Last one was on the 18th of August 2012 at the Olympic Park in Stratford, London. That was for my venue training, and I'm actually based at the Olympic Park in the main stadium. It entails checking people have the correct tickets. I do this with a scanner ticket machine, which I have been shown how to use, giving people general information like directions to places inside the stadium, showing them to their seating, etc. Shall be doing 9 days at the Paralympics, including the closing ceremony. Hope you find this article interesting for all your members to read. If anyone would like to contact me, please pass on my details. That will be fine. I would love to hear from anyone who went to St. Vincent's School. That includes all past pupils and staff, not just those who were at the school at the same time as me. Mrs. Joan Clark from Eastbourne, East Sussex."
Right, so thanks for that feedback, and hopefully more of you will get in touch now. We'd love to hear from you either on the Facebook page or via email, or even if you want to send a recording of your memories from school, anything like that, we would love to hear. So we'll give you full contact details at the end of the podcast, but the main one probably is the email address, which is podcast@svopa.co.uk.
Saying that, Joe, That was a good idea. Why don't people do a recording and send that in? Our next section is over to you.
Right, now we've a new section called Over to You, and we've had Louise Townsend, who some of you may remember from school. She was the person who you should always go to if you wanted info about the soaps. If you'd miss your soaps, Louise was the person to go to. And she's sent in some of her memories and her contact details for anyone who does remember her to get in touch. So here's Louise with her memories of school.
Hi, my name's Louise Townsend from Carlisle. A few of you who are listening to this may remember me from St Vincent's. I went there in 1982 and I left in 1986. I've decided to record some memories, and having had a chat with Jim Moran a few weeks ago, he suggested I did this and it could be put on the Bell newsletter. I have quite a lot of memories of school. One of my main memories was being in Myers Court group with Sister Anne, and I remember this being a group of people who not only had a sight impairment but also had another disability as well, so therefore it had junior girls and senior girls in it, and it was mixed. Sister Anne was lovely in her way, but I can remember she would not stand any nonsense. The people who I can remember being at school with were Gemma O'Connor and her sister Adele, who was a few years below me, Shirley and Caroline Stewart, but although Caroline was a few years above me, Tracy Poole, Dawn Volner, Debbie Davis, Carl somebody, but I can't remember his surname, David McCormack, Heather Wise, and there was another lad called David Starkey who joined us a little bit later on. I think he was from Wolverhampton, I think, if my memory serves me rightly. And the teachers I remember were Mrs. Duffy, Mrs. Doyle, Miss Evans, Mr. Mannings, Mr. McFarlane, Mrs. Errington. And I remember there was another woman who took over from Mrs. Errington for a while because she was pregnant, I think. Was she called Mrs. Morris or Mrs. Morrison or something like that? And I can remember she was actually quite strict, because there was once when you used to do your running round the track, I was guiding Heather round the track, and we're both running together. And we wanted to get our breath back before we actually started running round the track for a second time. Well, of course, while we were getting our breath back, we started to chat. And she said, if you've got time for a chat, you can start running. So that was the end of that. One girl I do remember who was in my escort with me was somebody called Vanessa. And she used to throw temper tantrums every morning because she didn't want to get out of bed. And I remember being, Bernadette Green was in the group as well, and Diane Wade, and Andrea Turner, the name just skipped me for a while there. They were both in the juniors. And then there was Nikki Madison later on, and Nicola, another Nicola as well, but I can't remember what her surname was. Simpson, Nicola Simpson, that's it. That's just come to me as well. And they were both in the juniors. One thing I do remember when I was at school was the first year I was there, there was actually a fire in the lounge at my escort, because I was watching TV one night, and then Karen, Miss Karen, who was on night duty for a while, was helping the junior girls get ready for bed. And I was sat in the lounge on my own, and the TV switched itself off, and then all of a sudden a spark came out the back of it. So I went to tell her Karen what had happened, and she shut the door and pulled the plug out and set the fire alarm off. The next thing we hear that is that there'd been a fire actually in the lounge, and we all had to go to the infants' quarters to sleep. The next morning, I remember going back to my school to get my school uniform, and you could smell the smoke as soon as you walked up the stairs. It was horrible. And that day was open day, was like the open day. And Sister Josephine, because my parents came from Carlisle, she used to let me travel home with them after the open day. And so for the reason of... we couldn't live in the group, basically. We all got an extra week summer holiday because obviously it had to be shut down. And then my last year of school, I ended up ended up moving groups. Well, the group moved to my escort's premises because my escort got closed down because Sister Anne retired. Everybody else would moved into Keller and Caulfield. And I really enjoyed that because I could mix with my friends before and after school. I can always remember on a Friday, we used to finish at 1 o'clock on a Friday. And we used to get sandwiches instead of a cooked meal. And then every 5 minutes, Margaret Gaskill used to shout up the stairs for whoever to say that their transport had arrived to take them home. And one thing I do remember, if you went through the Mice Court lounge, you went into, and next to that was the staff room, and then if you went through the staff room, you actually could go across a corridor, and the junior girls' dormitories were just at the end of that corridor. But and on your right hand side was a staircase, and that staircase was actually led down to the big hall. I mean, the only time I ever used that staircase was, I didn't even realise it was there until my last year, and that was the way I used to go back up to to my school. Whether you were supposed to, I don't know, but nobody ever said anything. I used to remember when you used to have the youth club, and the only money you were allowed to take for the full week was 75 pence. I mean, you wouldn't be able to get much with that now, I don't think. And you could get these little packets of crisps, like Quavers, I think they were, for about 5p, 5 pence, and you could get like a bottle of pop, I think, for about 10p, 15p or something. And next door to the youth club, it was the junior boys' playroom. And some of us used to go and watch the television in there. And there was one particular night, I can remember, Mr. Mannings was on prep duty. And he always used to stay on after prep and join in the activities. Well, he used to enjoy watching Brookside, and there was one night I wanted to watch Brookside, but this lad and a couple of others did, but this lad called Dylan didn't want to watch it, so we all got into a bit of an argument over it, and Mr. Mannings walked in and went, "Brookside, please." And as soon as he said that, the TV was just immediately switched over, just like that. And, you know, that was sort of that. I remember doing RE with Miss Evans. And then for a while I did RE with Sister Frances. And from the first couple of years of school, I think it was, I did English with Mr. Mac Farland. And then, but I was struggled a little bit. So I ended up with about three other people, Debbie Davis, Sean Waiting and Christopher Duggan, were in the small class for English with Miss Burns. And then I think that was, can't remember if it was the second or third year, but I was in a smaller class, you know, all the time, for every lesson that I had except swimming and PE. First of all, it was Mrs. Pace. And then after Mrs. Pace moved to the junior section, Sister Barbara took over that class, and we had every lesson with her. And then in my last year, in my third year, I was in Mr. MacFarlane's form, and in my fourth year was in Mr. Manning's form. But really what had happened was, in my first year, my class teacher was Miss Cunningham, and then I think she wasn't there all that long, and then it was Miss Griffiths after that. And I can always remember Miss Griffiths. There was one time Carl was going to chuck a chair at somebody, and I don't know who it was, but he chucked it and it almost hit Miss Griffiths. I don't know whether it actually did or not. I can't really remember that. In my squad, I can remember there was two Mrs. Burks. I think there were sister-in-laws, actually. One was the cleaner, and the other one used to look after us in the morning. And then when she retired, Jo Burke took over the morning duty, and we got another cleaner called Mrs. Woods. And Mrs. Burns used to look after us at night, but from what I can remember, Mrs. Burns wasn't there that long, because I think she died, actually. So we had a few, members of staff for not for very long, really, at night. And then Mrs. Appleton started, I think in about 84, 85, something like that. Before I go, I would be really interested in hearing from anybody, students and teachers, who were at school and either the same time I was or even before my time. I'd be very interested in hearing from anyone. My contact details are, my email address is louise.townsend, and I will spell that, it's all in lowercase, louise.townson at virgin.net, and my mobile number is 078-766-16268. Look forward to hearing from anyone. Bye for now.
Thanks very much for that, Louise. It was really interesting. It was great to hear from you as well. If there's anyone else got anything you would like to put on like this, just email it in to podcast@svopa.co.uk. If you do want to send something on a CD, I will put an address at the end of the podcast. Right, everyone, that comes to the end of SVOPA podcast episode number 3. We want to thank Ian Beverley and Jeanette Barclay for joining us this month and spending some time. We had a great time chatting to them, and hope you enjoyed the interview. Also, for the people who contacted us on the feedback section and also on the over to you. So let's have some more feedback for next month. And now here is the all important contact details.
Okay, you can email us, as always, at podcast@svopa.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter at SVOPA. You can also follow Michael at Ike Allen. You can follow me at Joanne Fishwick, should you want to. And here's Michael with your other contact details.
Yeah, if you can check out the website. We need to get this updated a little bit more, but that is www.svopa.org.uk, and the Facebook page is www.facebook.com/svopaliverpool. As I said earlier as well, I've got no problem people giving me a shout, you know, for ideas or if they want to get in touch with me. So my phone number is 0161 0287 1841, and my mobile is 07930 444 656. And if you want to send in things for over to you, if it's easy to record it on a CD or even a cassette, just send that in to Michael Allen, 3 Consort Avenue, Royton, Oldham, OL25, S for Sierra, E for Echo. So yeah, please get in touch, and we'll read them out or we'll play them in the future.
Right, that's great. So all it remains for us to do is to say goodbye for this month, and we'll see you again next month.
Yeah, see you soon.
Bye.